Last week, the Labor Department released its jobs report, which saw the unemployment rate fall to 11.1%, down from 14.7% in April. But with coronavirus cases once again peaking in cities across the country, some states are rethinking their reopening strategies, which could force employers to once again close their doors. Meanwhile, emergency federal unemployment benefits are set to expire at the end of the month, and millions of Americans have been relying on those funds to stay afloat. Joining me now is Gina Smilek, Federal Reserve and economy reporter for the New York Times. Gina, welcome to The Takeaway.
Thanks for having me on.
These numbers are always interesting, Gina. What do they really tell us about who's working and who's not working?
I think they tell us several things about who's working and who's not working. One is just that a huge number of people, compared to where we were in February, are not on the job. You know, we were seeing unemployment below 4% at 50-year lows, and now we are seeing it above the highest level it ever hit in the Great Recession. And so I think a huge number of people are still out of work, and increasingly we're seeing them report that they are permanently out of work instead of just on temporary layoff. Some of the really hard hit sectors include things that you would think of, you know, restaurants, service sector work, anything that's really high touch and involves a lot of human interaction, obviously is being really affected by this pandemic.
What do we know about whether Black and Latino populations have been affected more by unemployment? Because those jobs that you just mentioned do tend to be filled by communities of color and low-income folks.
Absolutely. I think this is the pandemic recession has been almost unique in how hard it has hit really vulnerable populations. And I think that one of the reasons for real concern going forward is some of that hit looks like it could be more lasting than for communities that are a little bit more privileged to begin with. You know, I think what we've seen is a lot of service sector jobs disappearing and some without much prospect for return. So if you think about casinos or if you think about restaurants and sort of airports and some of these institutions that have really been hit hard by the pandemic, those jobs are heavily populated by people in communities of color. And so the real concern is that as those jobs disappear and as they don't come back, and as some of them are permanently eliminated in the churn that the pandemic is going to create in the economy, and these populations that already had relatively low savings rates and were in a relatively weaker labor market position to begin with are going to end up being disproportionately sort of tossed out of jobs on a permanent basis and really struggle to become sort of re-enfranchised in the labor market as a result.
Gina, those who were lucky enough to hold on to their jobs or to be employed again, are they seeing the same wages that they were seeing pre-pandemic?
No. So this has been, I think, one of the most fascinating aspects of this story. Folks who kept their jobs through the pandemic have reported wage cuts. The reason that is so unusual is employers usually shy away from cutting wages at basically all costs. Generally, what we've seen in recessions is employers are much more likely to fire employees than they are to reduce wages. And the reason for that is that it is really hard to maintain morale while cutting wages. You know, you're going to have a much more productive workforce if you convince them that they are valued employees who you kept at all costs than if you sort of reduce wages across the board. And while you didn't fire anybody, now everybody who works for you is relatively unhappy. This recession has been very unique in the instance that, you know, employers have been sort of rapidly decreasing wages. And it seems like employees are getting behind this on the understanding that, you know, these are such unusual circumstances.
You know, one of the reasons I'm interested in this is, you know, we hear about job numbers all the time. They go up, they go down. But one of the most striking things about this moment, Gina, are the images of the long lines that we're seeing across the country of Americans lining up and waiting for unemployment offices to open. What is going on there? Can you tell us, are unemployment offices just inundated? What's happening?
One thing that was a real feature, I think, especially early on in this pandemic, is that a lot of state unemployment insurance systems just weren't particularly well equipped to handle the influx of unemployed people. And, you know, partially because this was such an unprecedented event. You know, you don't usually have a situation where a huge portion of businesses just suddenly close their doors and suddenly a huge chunk of the population is looking for some sort of help to make it through that period. And so states were not particularly well equipped. They were working on old systems, and there were extensive backlogs of unemployment insurance claims that really we're still seeing even now just being processed. I think one place where you can very clearly see this overhang is unemployment insurance claims, which come out each Thursday morning, continue to be very elevated, you know, at numbers that are far below what we were seeing at sort of the peak of the crisis back in March and April, but still numbers that would have been completely unprecedented prior to the crisis. You know, we're still well into the millions, which is pretty crazy. If you had sort of zoomed forward from January, you would have, if you didn't know what had happened, you would think that there was a massive crisis just hitting now. And so I think clearly this has been a real issue throughout this period.
One of the most frustrating things, I think, watching this, Gina, is that a lot of Americans are out of work through no fault of their own. This was something that, as you said, was just an unprecedented crisis that we've all sort of been struggling with. And so I'm wondering, you mentioned earlier that Congress was sort of debating whether or not to extend unemployment benefits for fear, at least, that people might almost begin to rely on them. But the question I have is, a lot of Americans lost their jobs through no fault of their own. Some of these jobs are never coming back. How would Congress justify not extending unemployment benefits?
Right. So I think So to be clear, it seems like the debate in Congress is mostly about the generosity of those benefits. And I think the question in a lot of people's minds is whether you get to a point where employers are trying to hire folks back, but it just doesn't make any sense for somebody who's making $600 a week in enhanced unemployment insurance benefits to come back into a low-wage job. Now, there are some people on one side of this debate who would say, you know, if employers want to compete with that $600 a week, they should pay up and pay more. There are other people on the opposite side of this debate who say the sort of arithmetic of that simply doesn't work. There are jobs for which employers don't make enough off of sort of the product of that job to pay that much extra. And so I think there's this debate that we're going to really see play out in coming months. I think that one of the really big issues in that debate is whether we're even in a strong enough labor market to worry about it. So it could be the case that, sure, there are plenty of people who are not going to come back to work with that $600 enhancement. It will make more sense for them to stay home. But there are so many people unemployed that for every person who doesn't want to take that job because of the $600 enhancement, there are several other unemployed people who will happily take that job because they want the security. And if that's the case, then the entire argument about the enhancement becomes a lot less powerful. I think we're going to hear a lot about this in the weeks ahead. The end of July is when those robust unemployment enhancement benefits are set to expire. So this is something that people are going to have to deal with in a pretty short order here.
Gina, how much do the unemployment numbers reflect the number of people who, for example, during the coronavirus peak were either furloughed or, you know, sort of temporarily not working, and now that businesses are starting to reopen are back working? Is that accounted for in the numbers that we're seeing?
I don't think we have a super clear idea of exactly what is going on here. We do know that backlogs are clearly influencing the number. Bloomberg actually did a very good story about sort of the counting issues that are happening. And one thing that I think was a really big takeaway from that piece, it was written by Katya Dmitrieva, if anyone's interested in looking it up. But I think one of the really interesting takeaways from that piece was that this is done in such sort of a patchwork way, and these claims are filed in such a state by state and sort of uncoordinated basis that it's really hard to paint with one broad brush what's happening in any individual state because every system is so different, and that makes this complicated, and it makes it really hard to sort of trace the trends on a week by week basis and understand clearly what is going on here.
And finally, are there any industries that have proven to be more resilient during this economy that you see as potential bright spots for employment going forward?
I think you can almost trace this one in the stock market, weirdly enough. The stock market does not always trace the economy, but in this case, I think you can see that really the tech companies have been the winners in this crisis. we've seen, you know, I think we can all, this all resonates with anybody who's been stuck at home, because, you know, your Netflix subscription is probably getting a lot more use these days than it was before. But it's everything. It's Amazon, it's Netflix, it's Google, it's sort of the whole suite of technology companies that were already pretty important to our everyday lives that just became increasingly indispensable as we all got stuck in our apartments and houses. And so I think those are a really bright sector of the economy. I think also anything that helps with connectivity from a distance, so think of the Zooms of the world, I think have been a real bright spot here. As we've discussed previously, though, there's a real problem with that reshuffling, in that the people who work for those companies, A, there are a lot fewer of them, and B, they tend to be a lot more high-skilled and often from sort of privileged demographics. So I think the real concern is the labor market hangover you see there really disproportionately hurts people who are already at a disadvantage.
Gina Smilek is a Federal Reserve and economy reporter for The New York Times. Gina, thanks for joining me.
Thanks for having me.